You're listening to episode 88 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, The Unbearable Lightness of Advertising. Episode 88 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 2nd, 2013. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my brother, James Vincent Furlough. That's right.
Yeah, that's my middle name. You know, it's a bummer you said that, because I was actually going to make a comment about it being a secret.
Well, I hope you didn't actually want it as a secret, because I'll just kind of set it live.
Yeah, I noticed. Don't worry about it. Moving okay. on.
Yeah, that's fun. Sorry about that. So, that was a really short show opening. this week, we're going to get straight to tech. I mean, like, no goofing around at all.
No bantering. When you, like, destroy all my privacy, man. What was the other thing that you did where I had to go back and edit it out? I can't remember now. Oh, was it my email? I can't remember what it was, but you did it at the end of the show. And I remember this because I had to go to YouTube and crop it out. And I was like, what? It's all right. That's the nature of the game, right? Or the beast.
Yeah. Right? Well, you can give away some of my secrets.
Matthew actually lives where you see. It's not... our mother's sewing room, that is his house.
You know what? I honestly, dude, if you saw my actual room, you would be like, looks about the same, actually. It's not even that different. This might be cleaner. But not for long. I actually might be moving on soon, which is kind of cool.
Speaking of moving, this is the last time that I will be in this place.
Really? Because that might be the same for me. And here,
big changes.
Next week might be an entirely different acoustic show. So if you've gotten used to the terrible acoustics of this particular setup, just be prepared. It may get better or worse. There's really no way to tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, actually, I probably won't. We'll do another show or two here, but there's a good chance it'll be that. That'll be it.
Not me. Internet's officially moving over Tuesday. I don't have a choice.
Oh man, yeah, I hear you. That's like the break point for everything. Oh, internet's gone. I guess I'll follow. You can turn the water off, power off, as long as the internet's there. So, anyways, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the show, James has got a short disclosure he's going to throw out there, and I'll try not to ruin any more of his secrets.
That's right. This is not a secret and shouldn't remain one. I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Cool. If you want to follow us throughout the week, and you can go to... Yeah, you should. It's pretty awesome. We talk about all sorts of interesting things and tweet about music and sports and dogs and places we're living and life events. And you can it's great. You can follow us on Twitter. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough. And I'm also trying an experiment. And so I'm actually, when I see an interesting article, I have been posting it on my Tumblr blog. It just seemed appropriate. And making comments, which is, care to guess, jamesfurlough.tumblr.com.
Nice.
But yeah, so you kind of get a sneak preview of at least what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, that's cool. And also, if you find me on Facebook, which it's pretty easy to find, my name is Matthew Dean Furlough. Facebook it. And I'll say yes. So, like, I just say yes to anybody who has to be my friend. But don't immediately IM me being like, hey, thanks for adding me. Give me your phone number so we can chat. Because I just assume you're some, like, creep or some, what's it called?
Stalker.
An advertiser, stalker, whatever. Like, I'm more than happy to be friends, but just don't do that. You just be like, hey, I'm a fan of the show, or I hate your show and I just want to pester you. I'll probably leave you around on my Facebook anyways. But, I'm just saying, it's weird people that do that. Do you ever get those?
I do not, no.
No? Jeez, just me? Okay.
I mean, I get the random friend requests from people who have no one in common in like three pictures, but
yeah,
not a follow-up like I am. Hey.
Yeah?
Give me all your purse. Share your information with me.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, it doesn't usually go that quickly. Usually it's like 4 or 5 tech. You're like instant messages like, hey, I'm new to the area.
Oh, wow. You actually carry on a conversation with.
Well, no, I know. That's the thing. They're talking at me and it's like 4 or 5 like messages over the course of like 20 minutes.
There we go. It's like all at once.
I say, and the last one's always like, okay, I gotta go. Just drop me your number and maybe we can hang out sometime. Like, I know I'm cute and everything, but this is super weird. I am not going to give you my number, actually.
Drop me your number and we'll hang out sometime.
Yeah.
Wow. That must work.
No. That must work. Wait,
how's the spelling? Is that pretty far on? Or is that...
No, dude, that's the weird part, is I actually think some of these people are just like what the feeling I get is that, like, that some of these people that do this are just people who are trying to meet people. Like, I just don't have really a better strategy.
Legitimately, you're doing it, huh?
Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking there are better strategies. I meet new people all the time, and I don't have to randomly ask people for... And at the very least, if you want my phone number, start by giving me yours. That's what I'm going to say. Like, let's build a little rapport first, but definitely don't ask for my digits and not give me yours. That's just not even... That's so weird. That is so weird.
Oh, man. That's...
Whatever.
Interesting. No, I do not have that. My Facebook profile must not be that cool.
Yeah, well, I'm a beautiful person with interesting lifestyles. Apparently. I don't know.
Do you mostly post public things or friends only? What's your...
I have no idea. I think I post everything public, though.
If you don't know, the answer is public.
You know what? That's actually, that's very true. Because my thing has always been, and with, like, personal information on the internet, is that if I don't want it on the internet, if there are people that I don't want to see it online, I don't post it. It's like, that's my, because I don't really care how, you know, secure my information is. But it's just, unless it's like my own personal server. But even then, like Facebook.
Which is actually probably less secure than, say, Facebook or some of those other ones.
But the chances that they're going to like open up my server space to, you know, my data to somebody else, like who, you know, just advertisers or whatever, because they decided that they changed their policies, that's far less. It's just more likely to get broken into.
Right.
I'm pretty small bean, so I don't really worry about it too much. But anyways, so what do you want to talk about today?
Let's start off with beams of noise canceling stuff.
Oh, baby. Okay. So do you own any noise canceling headphones?
No.
Okay.
Unlike you, I have the earbuds that Apple gave me, and that's all I have.
I'd say, you know, I don't actually have any noise-canceling headphones, but I have gotten kind of wacky with my headphones lately. I like them. But do you know how noise-canceling headphones work? It's kind of cool.
They figure out what the noise is and, like, do the inverse of it. I don't know.
Then cancel it.
Seems logical.
So, exactly. So if you picture, it's pretty much what it is. So what happens is like
the sound are waves, right?
Yeah, sound waves. Well, and what it's easier to think of with sound, or more accurate, I should say, is areas of compression and expansion. So the area around your ear keeps compressing and expanding at a certain rate, and that expansion is being done by, you know, an by all sorts of things, whether it's you breathing out and singing, or it's, you know, sound systems. And sound systems, you know, they have that cone, your, you know, on your stereo, that cone vibrates back and forth, and as it pushes out, it compresses. As it pushes back, it expands, and it creates these propagating waves, as they were. Mm. And what's cool with these, like, super sophisticated headphones is what they do is they basically sense what's coming on one side. So they literally have a little mic that picks up the sound. It knows what the sound wave is, and it creates an inverse. So when the sound wave is
obviously
hitting,
really fast.
Yeah, incredibly fast, because it has to do it in the time that it takes for the sound to travel from the mic to the inside of the headphone.
Wow.
And what it does is it literally, so as the compression of the wavefront comes, the your headphones inversely are pulling back, and so they're
okay.
It's creating a neutral area. But what's really cool about these is that it basically takes the incoming sound, inverses it, and then adds it to the sound that you're trying to hear, which is like your song. And then when you have all three going at the same time, so the incoming sound, the inverse sound, and your song, they all add up, and what's left over is just your song.
It's like canceling an algebra. I gotcha.
Exactly. Yeah, it's precisely like that. And it's pretty cool. And
have you ever tried a pair?
I actually haven't. Okay. I was reading this article and thinking that I should. I've had friends that had them. I could have tried them. And they all claim they work fantastic. Like, you know, especially they are absolutely the best when there's like a constant dull noise, like on airplanes and stuff. Like the sound of the airplane just goes away. And
that would almost
like,
be weird.
Know, yeah, they claim it is kind of weird. Huh. Really fast, loud noises will get through, especially if the noise levels are, or if there's a noise that's really loud compared to everything else, that'll get through. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just like normal murmuring and stuff, it's pretty good with that sort of thing. Well, so the reason why we're talking about this technology is because turns out that light waves work pretty much the same way. You can add and subtract light waves, and if you get two light waves going at the same time, in inverse, they cancel out and you get no light. Well,
that's weird.
This dude, yeah, it is kind of weird that it you don't usually think of it that way, but if you think of a magnetic field propagating as compressions and expansions, and that's what light is, which is what it is, it's essentially the same thing as sound. So it works the same way, which is why it works. So there's been this issue going on in the fiber optics community, reason why this matters, and the issue has been noise coming through the fiber optics. And basically what happens is, and what we've been doing with technology...
Like actual, like sound noise or light noise?
Light noise.
Okay.
And so what's been going on is basically you're trying to send a beam, you know, a laser through this fiber optic, you know, miles and miles and miles at the speed of light, as fast as you can. And what'll happen is other light will get in there and kind of mess around with the signal. And light can get in there through all sorts of different means. And, through, you know, whether it's like black body radiation or whatever, coming in and,
of course,
or
yeah.
just light, you know, whatever, or refracting or different sorts of things that
flashlight, you know, whatever,
stuff like that. Usually flashlights don't make it in cause they're like bundled and coated. But the thing is that what engineers have been doing for a really long time has been trying to create insulation around your fiber optic cables and create fiber optics that don't allow light in, don't allow light out, and don't cause refractions that might cause different light pulses over the length of the cable. They're basically trying to create what would be the equivalent of creating a soundproof room in order to cancel all the sound. And they've done a really good job of that, but...
which isn't really cancel, it's just absorb, right?
Right, yeah, and reabsorb or deflect or get rid of, you know, just basically prevent it from getting into your little area. So your area is perfect. Well, the researchers at Bell Laboratories in New Jersey came up with this idea that they're like, I can't believe nobody thought of this before, is basically what the scientists were saying in this article. It's awesome. They're like, we decided to send two beams of light, one which was the signal we wanted, and one which was the ambient noise that we were picking up on the other end. And as long as your ambient noise is relatively consistent, like it is with sound mm-hmm. counseling phones, they were finding that they additive, all three sources, so the noise, the canceling light, and the main light that was going through, and they were getting through an incredibly stable signal.
Whoa.
And what they were saying was the data was sent over a distance of 7,953 miles, a distance greater than the longest submarine cable, traveling at a speed of 400 gigabits per second, which is around 10 times faster than commercially available line speeds.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty awesome. Like, yeah, it worked really well. And what's great is that, like, this is just really, you know, common engineering. There's nothing really revolutionary or
cool.
There's nothing weird about what they're doing. They just made it 10 times faster. And the best part about this is because it's technology that has to do with what, you know, the data you're sending, you could literally, all of your like they were talking, submarine cables or your cables that are already lined, as long as you put a router, receiver, transmitters on either end, or just update the firmware to deal with noise, you theoretically could get huge boosts of speed in the already existing fiber optics network, which is pretty exciting. So,
wow.
I love these sort of like data compression, like moments and breakthroughs where like it doesn't require you to go through and rebuild anything. It just requires you to change how you were doing it a little bit and, you know, create just, you know, explosions of speed and usability. So pretty awesome. Probably going to be one of those things that will be incorporated in every fiber optic in the next, from here on out, I'm sure. So, very neat.
Dude, that's sweet. Way to go, yeah. Bell Labs.
Yeah. Nice job, science.
So here's one that you will appreciate more than me. What are they called? Are they the Santa Clara 49ers yet? Or are they the Fremont 49ers?
They're not going to Fremont. They're going to Santa Clara.
The Santa Clara 49ers.
Oh, baby.
Are building a new stadium. Care to guess where? And what's cool about it, though, is that they are trying to make a, like, they called it a software-driven stadium.
Nice.
Yeah, they're like, you know, part of it's because we're in the heart of Silicon Valley, but part of it's because it sounds awesome. And so they're just like totally teching this place out. So here are some examples. Sorry, there's a bird that just flew underneath the... Okay. Watching that. anyways, they so some examples they said is, while you're in the stadium, you can connect to its wireless network using your smartphone or tablet. Got it.
Nice.
To watch the game via any of the many 4K video cameras installed throughout the facility.
Oh, so that's for awesome. Example,
you could pick a point of view that offers a better vantage point than your seat, or you could watch close-up of the plays, or you could conceivably tune into a player's helmet cam.
That's awesome.
And then you liked where they were like, we don't have to. It's a bring-your-own-device, and if you want to watch an old-school way, cool. And I know for me...
Why would you?
That's a good question. I actually know for me, I really enjoy watching games on television actually more than watching them live or in person in the stadium. And the reason is I love all the extra information that the television cast gives you. where they talk about the players, some of their backgrounds, some of their accomplishments, what the significance of certain plays were. It also helps that, you know, they'll deconstruct the situation and you go, oh, okay, yeah, 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 I get what's going on here. And because you got to sit through the commercial breaks no matter what, so
yeah,
you know, who cares about the time part? And then I'll also like to follow for some of the bigger games to follow the tweet streams of what other people are saying, and you know, and just kind of be immersed in the game. And so, you know, which is what they are really trying to do, is bring that experience to the stadium itself.
Yeah, that's I like that a lot, especially like for me, because I
live near them. Oh, wait.
Well, yes. This is incredibly important because I'll probably be going to these games. But one of the things that I really like is that actually this is totally a side note, but I nearly bought a seat. I got very close to doing it, but I couldn't find anybody that would go in with me.
Oh, for the first season at the new place.
No, like season tickets that you'd buy a seat and you get that seat forever as long as you paid the
right.
Couple hundred dollars. Yeah. And
how much was it?
It was $2,000 for the first year. And you could finance it over like a 5-year period.
Oh my gosh.
And then it's like $100 upkeep from there on out. And
you get the
seat. But it's really not, I mean, like, as long as you plan on being in the area and being a Niners fan for the next 10 years, it's not terrible expenditure. It's just, you know, but the biggest, honestly, you know what the biggest problem is? They're awful seats. They're like way up in their nosebleeds. But you get to go to every game, so, you know, win some, lose some.
Well, and what that means is that the Super Bowl is going to be played at that stadium the first year.
Yeah.
And it means you would get to go to the Super Bowl,
which would be pretty cool. I don't know if it's $2,000 cool, but it's pretty, you know, at this point in my life, I don't know.
The deal is you wouldn't want one seat. You want two seats.
That's the thing. That was the biggest thing, is I couldn't find anybody that was, I had people who were very interested, but nobody that was willing to commit for, you know, one reason or another. And one of the big reasons was because he hadn't quite landed his job at one of the tech companies in Silicon Valley yet. And
is it too late to pull the trigger?
I don't know. I actually was just thinking, I mean, now that we're talking about this, this is the first time I've thought about it since in like the last 2 months. It might not be. That'd be pretty cool. And it's a very cool.
So here's a fun fact.
Yeah.
I don't actually know if you know this. Do you know? I don't want to say this. You know the most famous Apple ad ever, right?
Oh yeah.
Arguably the most famous ad ever. That was shown at a Super Bowl.
Yes.
And the Super Bowl was at the Stanford Stadium, and our parents were at that football game. So they actually missed the commercial because they were at the game itself.
That's awesome. You know what? It's funny. I knew that they were at the Stanford Super Bowl, and I knew that it was the ad was the Stanford Super Bowl. And I never actually put together that's right. They didn't get to see it.
Which they actually got. They're like seat cushions.
Yeah.
I guess that have the colored Apple logo on them.
Right. I didn't know that. I did not know that. That was the deal with that. That's funny because I remember those from our childhood. And that's funny. That's really interesting. That's cool.
There you go. And the 49ers were in that Super Bowl, and they won against the Dolphins, I believe. It was like 49-0, just like ridiculous. Or 49-7, whatever.
They killed the Dolphins.
Yeah. I don't feel bad about Marino. He did okay.
It's true. So what I was going to say was what I really like about this is that like with basketball, I really enjoy live basketball games. I enjoy live games, and one of the big reasons for it is because I like watching the other stuff. I like the audience. I'm very much an extrovert, so I like the crowds and everything, and I get a lot of energy from that. It gets me excited. But I do find, especially with football, that I like to watch things that nobody else likes to watch, particularly the front line, because I was a lineman during high school, so I like watching them duke it out in the trenches and everything. So the idea of being able to see that, like, and have that on my iPad and be able to look up and see the whole thing, that's really cool. I mean, that gets me super stoked. And they talk about the fact, like, I was reading somewhere that they were saying, like, the internet speed is just going to be nutty fast. They're like, yeah, we're pumping as much bandwidth in there as we can.
They better.
Because
if they do anything less, it'll be miserable.
Oh, yeah. And, well, yeah, and it's the middle of, you know, it's the middle of the tech world. So they realize that they're, you know, there's a certain type of audience that they're going to be catering to.
Well, you noticed when we went to our sister's graduation and once everybody showed up, our phones all suddenly stopped working.
Yeah, just stopped. That was ridiculous. It went from, like, fast internet to just stopped. Like, you couldn't even send a text message.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And, yeah, they definitely have to do that because it's just going to be, yeah, it's going to be, you know, packed again and again and again. Because
that was at most 15,000 people at the graduation.
And this will be, you know, regularly 50 to 60, I think that's how big it is. The stadium's gigantic. Like, you can see it from Fremont. It's unbelievably big. And part of it is that it's a relatively low skyline or, skyline that it's around so far. They're already building stuff all around it, getting ready for it. But
don't you wish you owned land in that area before they announced it?
Jeez, yeah, seriously. But they, the only people that hate this are the owners of Great America, and it's because they're taking their parking.
Okay.
For those of you that don't know, Great America is a theme park right there. It's cool, man. It is a cool stadium. They're doing some great stuff with stadiums nowadays. It's everything from, like, build construction process and visualization, but also the stuff that's going to be there. I'm excited.
Well, yeah, it's a total hotbed or a great opportunity to really push the bounds of some tech. Because, A, you can spend the money because, you know, you'll make it back.
Right.
And they're just huge. And, you know, so you get to do some pretty cool, exciting things. So, yeah, it's fun where they're like, no, we're not just building a stadium. We're going crazy with it because why not? And they don't care if it, you know, if it takes 20 years to buy back and they're charging you $2,000 for a seat. So,
yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's cool. The only thing I don't get is they're calling it Levi's Stadium, which I know why they're doing it. I miss the days when they had cool names.
I don't know. It's a pretty cool... Yeah, I mean, as far as... If you're going to go with a brand, though, Levi's a pretty good brand to go with. I mean, you know, outside of the fact that it's... They're really Chinese pants, not American pants anymore. But that's besides the point.
Oh, that's funny. You have to wear Levi's or Dockers. Those are your choices.
Yeah. That's actually pretty much all. Those are the only pants I wear right now are Levi's.
There you go.
But
you're a fanboy.
It's true. Seriously, it's ridiculous. Sometimes I take a look at my life and I'm just like, how did it come to this? It's because they make good products. What am I supposed to do? They make my butt look nice. I don't know.
Okay. Moving on.
That's it.
To, what is it? Is it Europe, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. Samsung's got a pretty cool phone out there, the Samsung Galaxy S4. They've also got the Galaxy Note. Mid to short term listener of the show, you know that I have a particular opinion about the Samsung Galaxy phone, specifically the Galaxy S3, because I used it for quite a few weeks. Before I ended up going with the iPhone 5, and I ranked the phones in I ranked the three phones that I tried were the iPhone 5, the Galaxy S or no sorry the Nokia 920, and then the Galaxy S3. And I actually was prejudicial against the Galaxy S3, not because of Android, but despite Android, I think is what I'm trying to say. I liked Android. I actually disliked the Galaxy S3 because I thought that they put a lot of garbage on there that that made it perform worse. And not to mention, if you actually went through and read all of the, you know, any comparative reviews, its hardware is just simply not the best out there. It's not a, you know, it's there are other Android phones, and there were at the time, and there still are to this day, that are better phones. And yet it's the best selling phone in the market, which is why I decided to try it out, because maybe I was missing something. the conclusion that I came to is that the criticism that I have, or the explanation I have for why the Galaxy S3 was the best-selling phone and why the Galaxy S4 is selling as well as it is, the explanation for that is the same as the explanation for why Apple computers sell as well as they do, is because their advertising is fantastic. Now, Apple, I think, backs it up with a little bit more, but the simple nuts and bolts of use is they're both great advertisers. And the reason I say this is because there's this real, like, you know, Samsung is just killing everybody else in the market.
Right.
We gave you the numbers a few weeks ago where they're selling like 90% of all Android phones are Samsung phones. Of the entire market, they're basically like 97% of the phones are either iPhones or Galaxy phones. Right. And everybody else is like splitting up 3-4% of the market. And you know, Nokia's fighting.
Which is mostly like the Nexus line, because people want to run stock Android.
Right, exactly. So HTC launched a phone a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And it's the HTC One, and the reason I bring this up is because it basically has received across-the-board acclaim as one of the world's best smartphones. And to the effect of, if you go through some of the reviews of it, it's not just like, oh yeah, this is one of the best ones. It is simply the best. Wow. It's hands down better performance, better software, tighter integration. One of the things that it doesn't have is it doesn't have quite as many features as the Galaxy phones do, because Samsung has thrown everything into those.
Well, yeah.
It's more along the lines of stock Android or the iPhone, where it does have some proprietary HTC stuff, but mostly it's just really clean, you know, high performance and just incredible hardware. Great battery life, great screen, great touch response, great camera. Just, it's great. It's a great phone, and HTC can't give them away. So this has just become like one of those things where, I don't even know what you're supposed to do as a company like this.
Yeah, because generally it's if you have a better product, they will sell.
Right.
Typically tends to be true. And this is a weird one where everyone says they have a better product and they're just not selling well.
Right, and this goes back to HTC has been getting drumming on this for a while. This idea that Samsung beat them on advertising. That is it. And more and more evidence seems to be mounting that that's the case. That HTC can build as good, if not a better, phone at as good, if not a better, price, and can't sell them. And if you think about it, I mean, Samsung, they attack aggressively the iPhone, but they're relatively good commercials in how they do it. They're kind of subtle, and they have some
they're not
subtlety
subtle.
To them, but or at least their jokes aren't, you know, they're not just like, I don't know, they make decent
right.
jokes.
They're not being mean. They're just not being like iPhone's stupid.
Yeah, exactly, and what they're doing is they're making fun of you for like, oh, that's a grandma's phone. If you're gonna use that, you're like, what's that? What's wrong with grandma's using the phone? Come on now. They've had a giant ad campaign. So HTC, and really this is like true of the rest of the market as well, or the rest of the competitors, is the problem they're running into is like now they're in this like horrible spot where You can have these great phones or you can have these awful phones. It doesn't really matter. What you really need to do is dump money into advertising now. And you really need the help of the carriers to push your device as well. Like you need the, you need a two-pronged thing. You need to be getting on TV and you need people in the stores selling your phones.
Which is crazy to me that the carriers don't push whatever the best phone is. Because you would think that it would be in their best interest to have you buy a device that you enjoy using and will use often, because that directly gives them money.
Right. And this, well, there's a, let me read this to you from the article. Since those two suggest, let me get, in particular, HTC to task for its puzzling decision to offer the HTC One on every major American carrier except for Verizon, which just happened to be the largest wireless carrier in the United States. But even this is something of a catch-22, since Brunston admits that carriers are going to be more interested in manufacturers that can offer more sales, and that no one does scale like Samsung. And they're basically saying that Samsung can do the full manufacturing back end, but it's becoming this like self-perpetuating machine where HTC doesn't have the money and the supply chain to ramp up production on the HTC One. So the so Verizon doesn't even bother, you know, doesn't want to sell them, and a lot of people don't want to sell them because they only want to sell the ones that they're going to sell the most. And the ones that are selling the most are the ones with the biggest ad campaigns, and the ones with the biggest ad campaigns, it's a huge, like, it's this giant cycle, and you just sit there and you're like, you shake your head and you're like, how is it possible? Yeah, like you said, it's just such a weird place to be where it's like you clearly have the best product in the market and you can't sell them because you can't, you know, and part of it is the relationship of the carriers. You know, you need the carriers, and the carriers need to, you need to sell the device to the carriers as much as you do to the consumers. And you need to sell to the consumers in a way that is apart from, you know, tech performance. And this is classic, you know, Apple. They didn't care about, you know, why did they never talk about gigahertz and gigabytes and RAM and ROM? Because they knew that, or Steve Jobs knew that people didn't care. They didn't want to know about it. What they wanted to know is, what can I do with it and how reliable is it going to be? And if you can say you can do these tasks and it's going to be very reliable, even if those tasks weren't performed as well or if there weren't as many, people were going to buy that because it was reliable. It just worked. And it was, you know, and they understood it.
Yeah.
What Samsung has done is they've hit a couple of really, you know, tap to share. You know, does it work? Yes. Is it reliable? Yes. Is it unique? Yes. Is it, you know, is it easy to understand? Yes. Is it easy to replicate with other devices? You mean by texting that same file to each other? Yeah, it is. But that's not the point. Is it, you know, you know, from an advertising perspective, Samsung has just done a brilliant job of really hitting the two things that you need: reliability and ease of understanding. And then they made it look cool. And HTC hasn't done any advertising; they've really relied on the best product. I just think it's really fascinating because it's, you know, because it just, man, it's so, the tech industry is so weird in that, you know, and I find that. I hope one of the reasons why this is a good show or why people will appreciate this show is because I really try to keep in mind that it's because I get excited about products because they're the best or because they have certain features that I really like doesn't mean that the rest of the world cares at all. And it doesn't even make me right, you know? you know, and
yeah. Well, because running an organization, really, it's right. Not just about the product. It's also about the marketing, and it's about the sales, and it's about the customer service and the services. You know, it all plays a role together. Every once in a while, there's some products that are so innovative that, well, the marketing then happens word of mouth, and right. Their problem is, you know, they go, oh, it just runs Android. You know, they unfortunately get lumped into this big group where you almost have to advertise and say it yourself because everyone else just gets confused. Right. And, you know, so they go to the store and they go, oh, I saw the Samsung ad because I know I don't want an iPhone. I've got to imagine that's how the conversation goes. I'm not really interested in an iPhone. I'm interested in an Android. And that's how they walk in. And they go, oh, I've seen the Samsung commercials, and that feels familiar, and it feels safe.
Right.
And so they naturally gravitate towards that. And HTC might be good. And I think it's good advice. If they could improve the relationship with the carrier somehow, that's when the salesperson would go, if you think that's cool, check out this one. It's very similar, better built, blah, blah, blah. You get the sale.
And say, you know, one of the things that, like, it's important to remember is as much training as the guys on the floor, you know, get, the actual salespeople get, they don't have a script that they necessarily stick to. A lot of times they're as influenced by using the phones and the advertising campaigns as anybody else. They
True.
Want to – they, you know, a lot of the guys there aren't, you know, aren't – I this is going to come off as offensive and ivory tower-ish, but whatever. A lot of those guys aren't engineers that have been like working with these products and like evaluate them on you know huge tech standards. A lot of these guys are just, you know, like whatever. Like I kind of get phones and I'm working a day, you know, I'm working an hourly wage job as a salesperson at Verizon.
Well, and that's more of it, right? Cool. They are not. That's not their career, often.
Right.
I mean. You know, with rare exception,
right?
That is not their career. It's just a step up from working at Arby's, really.
Right, and yeah, and as two people that worked at Arby's, we just want to throw that out there because I don't want to be too ivory tower-ish.
I know. I'm just trying to help you out there.
I actually hung out. If you followed my tweet or Facebook, I went and got dinner at Arby's and hung out with old coworkers yesterday. It was kind of fun.
Dude, I love Arby's. I should eat there tonight. Dude, I'm gonna tomorrow. I'm doing it tomorrow.
I just had a regular roast beef and some potato cakes. Oh my goodness!
My dude tonight. I'm trying to decide. Let's do this podcast. I'm doing it tonight.
Yeah. Seriously. Let's go. what I found was with my my point here is that it's like, you know, a lot of these guys, not to say that the Samsung, you know, obviously the Samsung is ridiculously well selling and it's a good phone, but I'm just my broader point is that a lot of times. You know, well, and even if you are like a hardcore engineer, you might just be as into I want to look cool as anybody else. Like I want people to see the status symbol of the phone that I have. Like there's a certain amount of, you know, it's
not
ridiculous.
Me. I don't do that at all.
I was gonna say.
Did you grab your phone too? Nice.
It's ridiculous. I've decided to keep the back off of my phone. And okay.
You're just a shallow person. That's the secret, everybody.
I'm going to say.
You are shallow how.
I actually have gone through a transformation in the last 2 years where I've decided to be as brutally honest about myself to as many people as possible because I think it's healthier for me. But what I've realized is that I really like the iPhone. I like how it feels in my hand when it's naked. But there is a certain amount of I will put the iPhone down, screen down, so that you can see the aluminum back. Because the aluminum back is on the iPhone 5. iPhone 4S's and 4 have glass backs. And I notice that sort of stuff. So I'm hoping that other people that notice that sort of stuff. Because from a distance, you can't really tell if it's the bigger screen or not. But from a distance, you can tell if it's aluminum or not. Which is just stupid. I mean, that's just the dumbest reason to buy a phone at all. But yet, guess what? You know, I really got to come down from my ivory tower at this point. But
you are far from it. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. But that's the point. I guess is the broader point here is that HTC, they need to do more than just have a great phone. They need to convince the salespeople that it's cool. They need to convince, they need to convince the engineers that it's unbelievably impressive and that it's very reliable. They need to convince mom and dad that it's going to do what it's supposed to do every time and it's never going to have any bugs. They need to convince, you know, and that's all advertising. That's just, you know, pump some money into it. But now they're in this place, they can't sell phones, so they don't have a lot of extra income. They can't scale because they don't have a lot of extra income. And what are you supposed to do at that point, you know?
So
at least they're not BlackBerry. That's the real point here.
And I'm trying to remember. Yeah, so, and this could be a weird one, too, that's throwing it in, is that the HTC One also comes with Facebook Home already pre-installed.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm wondering how much that's playing a role in the lack of sales. Because from everything that I've been reading about Facebook Home, it's not doing as well as they would like it to, which I'm not 100% sure why, other than it's like, wow, that's a lot of Facebook. You know, it's almost like they overdid it where they needed to highlight with Facebook, and instead they painted with Facebook. Yeah.
Well, I think this goes back to I would argue, okay. Well, I would argue that's an advertising thing as well. You know, it's funny. I kind of knew that somewhere in the back of my head, but I'd forgotten that. Now you mentioned it's like, oh yeah, of course it's that's HTC One that had Facebook Home. But I had forgotten, and that's part of it. Like, I just don't know enough about the phone. Like, I read reviews and stuff, and I'm reading articles. And whereas, like, I know everything about the stupid Samsung phones because everybody talks about them all the time because they're advertising them incessantly. And that's the thing. I mean, that's, you know, even this show where we try to be broad and, you know, or at least wear our biases on our sleeve, and view other stuff, we're even biased towards good advertising campaigns, which is why it's part of the show opening that we talk about advertising campaigns, because, you know, we realize we're all affected by it. There's some stupid smart people that work in advertising. Some of the most creative people in the world.
You know, there's a subtlety that I just realized happened when we were together.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. Like normal. And I don't know how to deal with this. This is inside baseball. But did you notice that we'd be talking about a subject, and at one point in time I would close the tab and kind of move on to the next one?
Yeah.
And I usually do it just because I feel like we've covered everything in the article and we're moving on to just the editorial part, and I'm half thinking of the transition and what I'm going to be saying next, half listening, which sometimes comes off that way. But that besides the point. But what I noticed was that when I closed the tab, you took that as a signal of, oh, okay, time to move on to the next story, which I was okay with. But
it's interesting. That's interesting because I don't actually close the tabs, but I move back to the main document, and I do at least subconsciously follow you on that. So what do you want to talk about?
No, that's fine. I could feel this one was winding down, and I was just thinking about it. I want to talk about the D11 conference.
Okay.
Which essentially that happened this week.
Right.
So it's all things digital. It's like a week long deal. It's incredible. I know. And it's just nonstop. They have interview after interview after interview, and it's awesome.
If I had to actually come up with a what do I want the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast to be one day, the All Things D would be it. Which, you know.
Yeah, we don't have. Yeah.
We're working on it.
Dreams. That's what you put them out there for. So
exactly.
Tons of really good interviews. I watched a bunch of them, and but there was one in particular that I wanted to talk about because I know it gets it going, and it was the opening act, which was one Mr. Timmy Cook on stage to chat with Malt Wasberg and Kara Swisher,
okay,
whatever. They do the thing. They're the ones who interview people and do the demos, and it's kind of their deal.
Right.
It's very cool. P.S. You can watch all this stuff on their website. All things D conferences videos. They're all there, and they do the cuts plus the whole things, and so you can watch this. So this was like an hour and a half interview, I believe, and it was painful. I'll be honest.
Really?
It was horrible to watch.
Why?
And And it really gets into contrast when they started talking to other CEOs. And those were fun and awesome, and I really, 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 really enjoyed them. Because yeah. I would say, and I'm gonna be truthful, this was an hour and a half interview, and he answered exactly zero questions.
What do you mean?
Every single time they asked something, he'd go, I can't talk about it, or I'm not ready to announce anything, or... Yeah, we're interested in that space, but I'm not going to talk about it. It was like – it was like a running gag.
Yeah.
To a point where you're just like, just answer a question. Just give us something. And I was reading this article about it, and it was called The Unbearable Lightness of What Tim Cook Says.
Yeah.
Which I think – and here was like his final, I think it was his conclusion-ish, or second to last one. It said this: what frustrates about Tim Cook is that while Steve Jobs was every bit as persnickety about revealing Apple's product plans, heck, Jobs was downright untruthful about Apple's plans, Jobs would say darn interesting things in the process. Cook, on the other hand, is completely confident in his ability to outweigh his inquisitors because he, after all, presumably knows what's coming. He also seems perfectly content with the knowledge that this isn't about him, despite the world's greatest desire to make it so.
That's funny. It's funny that, honestly, that I have read that same or that sentiment of Tim Cook can outweigh anybody, evidently. Again and again and again. That was the big takeaway.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. He just goes, which was fun. I think Jobs was a better interviewer, for one.
Yeah.
And better thinking on his feet. And, you know, and so he would say stuff and realize that you can't just say no comment for an hour and a half. I mean, it, literally, there were points where he would just be like, I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to talk about this.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that Steve Jobs was great at. Well, and this is the difference between one of the differences that you think you see between Tim Cook and Steve Jobs is that Steve Jobs was as much a politician as he was anything else, and in that his and we respect and well not necessarily respect, but we enjoy it when you have somebody who's a politician, but he's not trying to, you know, do politics because it's fun to watch, you know, as he messes with interviewers and stuff. But you know,
well, and I don't think he was necessarily messing with people. I honestly think it's Steve Jobs has a vision or had a vision of where it wanted to go, and they would ask a question, and he had a genuine opinion, and he could not contain himself, and he would talk about it. And in some cases, you know, they'd say he'd flat out lie. I'd be like, he might have actually felt that way that day. Or,
yeah,
you know,
that's the thing about, sorry.
Yeah, or, you know, he might have been throwing it off down another cent. But I think part of it is just he had a thought. And he would go, I'm not going to answer that. But, yeah, let's talk about televisions and where I think some of the problems are and where we're headed. And I don't think Tim Cook is enough of a visionary or even enough thinking fast on his feet to say, I'm not going to tell you what we're working on, but I'm going to, you know, let's talk about just some of the problems that I see. And Jobs was confident enough that he wouldn't give it away. Whereas I think Cook is fearful of giving it away. And so many times, like people, one guy in the crowd, like literally during the Q&A at the end, called him out and was like, dude, Google's given us a vision for the future. People are talking about the future. You're not giving us anything. He was like, and maybe that was one that he answered. He goes, I believe in surprise. That was his answer.
You know what? And you know what? One of the problems is I read an interesting article like just this.
I get the surprise, but you gotta make me want to know what you're talking about.
I think there's like this. I think there's a problem going on in Apple right now, and I'm starting to come around to there's an issue that I've been long in the belief that Apple kind of they came up with a strategy where they would release a bunch of new products, this whole suite of new stuff, and they'd kind of go on this like they were going to keep the year cycle on all of their product releases. They're just going to do it all right before Christmas or right before Q4 so they can get all their big Christmas sales and just kind of keep everything on that rotation. And the more and more I read, the more and more I'm starting to come around to the idea that something happened the last quarter and they totally missed a product that they were trying to launch. And for whatever reason, they skipped it. And the reason why I say that is because more and more I'm reading people who are criticizing them for, you know, Tim Cook is completely messed up. And you're like, point out what he's messed up on. Okay, the stock is down, but their sales are still up. They're still making tons of money. They're still, you know, the biggest company in the world. Like, seriously, what has Tim Cook completely messed up? And this is where I start to come to the idea that I think what Tim Cook has messed up on is that there's a secret. There's a big secret that got slipped up in Apple in the last 6 months. And the tech media, the guys that actually know what's going on, that have inside sources, are going, hey, what's going on here? And the guys in the company are going, dude, we totally messed up. Tim Cook is going to get all the backlash for this. Everybody that's like in the know, your big investors, they're getting that inside information. And that sort of stuff is just not leaking out. And the only reason why I say this is because I do think that within the tech media, it's sort of like the whole, how did Tiger Woods get away with, you know, being a philanderer for so long,
yeah,
when his entire image was about being a nice, respectable, you know, good father, good husband, great athlete, totally dedicated to the things in his life. And that was what his entire image was based on. That's how he was able to bring in so much ad revenue. And he was able to do that because everybody was making money off of that image. And I think right now there's so many people that are still making money off of that image, even though that there was clearly, or even though there was a breakdown within Apple, in the last 6 months. I think that, and coming back all around to D11,
and then I want to comment.
I say coming back to D11, I think what's going on is I do think Tim Cook is, I'm getting the sense that they've got some really cool stuff going on and they don't really know how to, but they don't have like a timeline for it, and they don't want to give too much away. And you know, and it's like the IMAX that they announced and then didn't launch. They didn't actually start selling them for 2 months. Like, why didn't they just wait 4 or 5 months and release them in, you know, March? Like, stuff like that. I think they actually, and that to me, that's the product that seems clearly Apple. That to me is the biggest red flag of something went wrong within Apple corporate, and because that one totally makes sense to hold off on until after Christmas, and they didn't. And you know, at least they have one new product to come into the.
Well, and I think it was a combination of, you know, they weren't really ready for that one, plus they weren't ready for Maps, I think was another one. But the other interesting part is that no one's leaving. You know, the only people who are leaving are being forced to leave. As a matter of fact, you know, retirees are not retiring.
Right.
So it can't be that big of a screw up.
Well,
you know,
I
something
guess what
obviously
I mean
is right. It's almost like Steve Jobs. I remember this was an awesome line in CSI. It was after Grissom left, and yeah, you like this.
Yeah.
And what's her face?
I was Catherine.
Catherine, yeah, she took over and was really struggling on the job, and Eckley was getting all on, you know, on her for not doing a good job. And this was when Sarah Seidel came back because, you know, they needed help or something. That was a weird little plot hole weirdness where it was like, no, she's back, but she's married, but Grissom isn't, and she's hanging out with him, but not really. It's weird. Anyways, she made the comment. She goes, you know, she said, Grissom, obviously successful, awesome at his job. And he goes, but he had the one thing that you don't have. And she was like, what does he have? Tell me the secret. She goes, you. And he's like, you were his number two. You did the paperwork. You took care of other stuff so that he could do his thing.
Right.
And she's like, you need to find your replacement. To which she promoted Nick, and he was like, congratulations. Now here's a stack of paperwork. And it was an awesome scene. And And I can't help but wonder if that's what he is missing, which is part of the reason why Johnny Ive got pulled up. You know, he's like, I'm trying to find my number two, but it's got to be a visionary because I can do the operation
right.
stuff. And yeah. it's weird when you flip the roles. It has to – 99.99999% of the time, it works best when the visionary is the leader and the operation guy is number two following the leader's vision. It's yeah. you know, otherwise it's like, oh, this is weird because it just doesn't work.
Right.
And so I think that's what he's struggling with, but I think that there were some mess ups, and so he, because there wasn't an operations person, so hey, check this out, the supply stuff suddenly got messed up because he was focusing his time on other things. And
right.
he got super excited for showing off products, and he was told it would be fine, but didn't check in himself. And
yeah,
you know, so there was probably some trust lost there. But
right.
I also think, you know, I agree with this, where he's like, it's not about me, and he doesn't like public speaking. And,
yeah,
and so he's like, I'm going to make this horrible. And I'm just like, they invited him back because they were hoping that this year they would get something from him, and it would be awesome. And they just had to have got done with that and shook their heads and went, that was the biggest mistake in the world.
Right. And he's willing to come back because he's like, whatever, I'll go talk to
her. And for me, it would have been like halfway through the interview, I think. I would have waited till halfway. I would have punted on the future stuff and just be like, okay, let's talk about past things. And
yeah.
let's talk more about your philosophy. Which they shifted a little bit. They were talking about taxes and whatnot, but he was like, he doesn't why are you asking him other than he went up to Congress and you know, and he himself was like, I'm not the expert on this. I, you know, so it was just, I would have changed up strategies significantly. I did like this one Q&A question though. And it was this guy from The Verge got up and asked it. And I like his writing style, and he's pretty fun to watch on their videos too. But he was like, and you'll love this. He says, you guys are doing your litigation and stuff and suing companies like Samsung. He goes, and Samsung has clearly differentiated their products by adding a whole bunch of features that nobody wants. And, you know, to which he got round of applause and stuff, and everyone was laughing. Ha ha, funny. And,
yeah. and it's funny because it's true.
Well, I know. And he goes, what are you hoping to get out of these things? Why are you still suing them? What's your end game here? What's your point and your purpose and your hopes and dreams for this? And I was to which I was like, that's an awesome question and one that you think Cook would be able to answer. To which I think he was already in the mode of, I'm not talking anymore.
Yeah.
And so he answered some question of like, it was funny. The one thing he did say, he was like, well, I think we clearly showed that the things that we have copied from people are their standard essentials and you can't do that. And he was like, no, I'm not talking about when you got sued.
Yeah.
I want to know why you're suing. And he was just like, we just don't like when people copy our stuff. Can't do that. Make your own tech.
It's like, I think there's a certain amount of, you know.
Technically yeah, true.
Tough is that it's not the Microsoft strategy, which everybody seems to be okay with, which is we're going to sue you until you have an agreement, and then you'll pay us for it. You know, and you know, quite widely known, Microsoft often makes more money off of every Android, or off of certain models of Android phones than Google does because of all of the, you know, all of the different, you know, and that's the thing that I think that everybody doesn't get with Apple is it's like, you can't just take these features from the phone. Why don't you just settle until they pay you for every device used? Like, why can't you just play nice? And that, you know, that's where, yeah, copyright is ridiculous in a lot of areas, but that's the one thing that people can tend to agree on is that if you've got a decent patent, you know, and you got a, you know, a popular product, well, okay, you start paying people who you got inspired by is basically what it all comes out to. And it's a bit of an extortion. And it's interesting that he doesn't, you know, what it draws attention to is that it feels less like he's saying, like he's saying, we don't like people copying our stuff, and more like, I don't really know, man. It just bothers us, so we're gonna spend our money and time this way. You're like, yeah, but you're not helping anybody. Well, you're not helping yourself. You're not helping them. You're not.
Yeah, and his point too, he was like, because clearly you tried to get their phones banned and that didn't work. So now what are you going for? What's your like?
Right.
What's your hope? Because he's like, so they pay you $1 billion. Big deal. That doesn't stop you. Doesn't stop them. That's just money changing hands.
It's a lot of money, but like, let's be honest. It's like less than 1% of what you have in the bank. Like.
Yeah, exactly.
Heck, guys?
And so, yeah, it was very interesting, the question. And then another guy he asked about, he's like, are you planning on like opening up your system to other stuff? I think he specifically talked about iTunes, and he asked about iCloud, and was like, you know, make this accessible anywhere else. And Cook's answer was interesting. He goes, one of the fallacies that people believe or myths about us is that we never want to work with other operating systems or, you know, interoperate. He goes, we don't have that philosophy at all. We are very willing to do what's ever best for our customers. And, you know, and if that means open it up, we will. That's fine. He goes, we just evaluate each situation and say, does it make sense to do it in this particular case or not? And he goes, so I'm going to add this little preamble here. He goes, so far, she's like, okay, got that. He goes, we don't see any reason to do it. And you're like, okay, got it. So, I also don't think that was code for wait until next week or 2 weeks, whatever it is.
I think it's so clearly what it is. It's iTunes works with Windows because if it didn't work with Windows, no one would use iTunes. And if no one used iTunes, no one would have iPods. You know, and that's why they play nice. They play nice when they absolutely have to. You know, why do they stick to internet standards? Because everybody uses the same internet standards. But if they could get away without using internet standards, you know, they would.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. Anyways, that was more than I probably wanted to spend on it. But it was interesting. It's if you want to watch something painful, you can watch it. I doubt he'll be back next year. Or I should say he won't be the headliner. Is probably a better way to say it. But
probably
they need to do a better job.
Ives.
They need to realize that he is not Steve Jobs and they can't ask the same questions.
I wouldn't be surprised if they had Ives come up, though.
Maybe, but he doesn't like... he refuses to do that stuff, so...
Actually, that's a good point. They probably did ask him, and Cook was the second guy in online. We gotta
Well, it's the kind of thing
Apple.
Where what they need to do is... they don't need to do it. It would be better if they timed it so that it happened after an announcement or WWDC. Because those were always the best ones with Jobs. It was like right after they announced the iPad, they had the WWDC. And so he was totally willing to talk about it and what they did and some of the philosophy and thoughts. Because he's like, well, the cat's out of the bag now. So,
right. And the other thing is that, you know, Scott Forstall was their best public speaker. And he's not working with Apple anymore. So it's like there's really been nobody to step up to bat for those sorts of announcements and and product pipeline stuff. So I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma because part of, you know, as we were talking earlier, why is Samsung doing great? It's image and advertising. And All Things D is one of the biggest sources of getting your mavens excited, getting people like us talking about it so that our listeners talk about it, so they tell their friends about it. That's part of the, you know, that is a huge part of the word of mouth campaign. And I think that is the biggest problem, is that there is no word of mouth about Apple coming out of All Things D. There's a lot coming out from Google. There's a lot coming out from Tesla. There's a lot coming out for, you know, a lot of their competitors. But nobody is talking about Apple except to say that Tim Cook is a stone wall, and it's almost impressive and it's annoying. I'm not even mad. I'm just impressed.
Well, that's what everyone was just like, wow, that was unbelievable. Wow, he just did that.
Yeah, okay, but and I don't think that that's actually good for Apple. I think that hurts Apple long term because it's, you know, such a big part of how many devices you sell is how many people are talking about your devices, and we're not talking
about
them.
And secrets are good, but you have to make me believe that you're holding a secret I want to know.
Yeah, the best part, I mean, like, that was the best part about Steve Jobs is, like, nobody reads books anymore. TV is dead. You know, when he would, like, criticize other people just, like, and then come out with a competitive product 6 months later, like, at least say that kind of stuff. Like, at least, you know, go out there and just be ridiculous. That's all we're asking for. You know, just get us excited.
Well, and then, you know, you do that enough times. Now it's like, no matter what you say, I don't know anymore. I just,
exactly.
I know I liked what I've seen previously. And
I know.
Now I'm just going to. Because you talked about books, I'm like, something with books.
Yeah.
Something with TV.
You're speaking about books. This is important. And it's funny. I think that's the biggest reason why everybody thinks that there is an Apple TV. It's because Steve Jobs has said so many times, TV is dead.
Well, and so, and if you can do like one, if there was any like one correlation trying to read the tea leaves, it was they asked about television. Like, are you working on a TV thing? Like, what's up with that? And he was like, well, no comment. Other than to say, it's a place of immense interest.
Yeah.
Like, okay, fair enough. Like, so are you coming out with something? He's like, it's a focus of immense interest or whatever. He must have said that like 7 times. And they kept trying to ask it different ways. And he just, like, no, not going to answer it. But then they moved on. And they're like, okay, well, let's talk about wearables. And which we'll talk about later in the show. But they're like, what do you think about the glasses? You know, what's Google's doing with that? He's like, honestly, they're like, yeah, that'd be nice for once.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think glasses are stupid. He's like, I only wear them because I have to. He's like, and you would have to make them a whole lot. He's like, you'd have to give me a reason to wear them. And he's like, and part of it, they'd have to look cool. They have to match your style. He's like, which is really hard to do and put a computer on it. He's like, I just don't see it. That was the pun. And they're like, okay, well, what about like other wearables, like say a watch? And he goes, well, he goes, I wear. He had like the Nike Up or Fuel Band.
Yeah,
I think it was the Fuel Band. And he was like, it's cool because it syncs with my phone and gives me information. He goes, but the problem is it only does one thing. And he's like, and he goes, it'd be nice if it did other things and had other sensors in it too. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And they're like, so are you working on something that would do that?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I would just say it's an area of incredible interest. So I went, okay. So we asked about the TV. Well, we're all pretty sure you're doing something. It's just a matter of what are you doing?
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he was surprised about how well the Apple TV is doing. And they come back and say it's incredible interest. They ask about the glasses. He's like, stupid, no. And then you ask about the watch. He goes, incredible interest, and has some, you know, like very little stuff to say about it. Like, okay.
Yeah.
They're doing something. We just don't know what yet.
It's funny. Okay, so I actually
which
this
is like
an appropriate
no news,
time
really.
To bring this up, I guess. But I Friday night I went to see Imagine Dragons. You know that if you followed my Twitter. It was really fun, but while we were there, I met a couple of Apple employees, and I always have an Apple employee question or a Google employee question up my sleeve if I ever meet one. And the current Apple employee question is always, so I've been thinking about buying a Pebble watch. Should I? And these guys' responses were interesting because,
you've shared some other people's responses, right?
Yeah. They're definitely working on one. I mean, like, I mean, obviously, Tim Cook.
Don't tell me these things.
I know.
They still they haven't even made my white one yet. It's the
last one
to be made.
It's awful. I'm sorry. But so, and the one response that he said was that one of the guys, he goes, the one thing I have to say is that it's all about the battery life. He goes, that's going to be the biggest, that's the big thing that they're working on. And I was like, well, how do you know this? And he goes, well, I worked on the battery for the iPhone for the longest time. I'm in a different department now, but I know that that's a big thing. And they're doing that. That's what the intense focus is on. Like, so you like,
so the Pebble goes a week. Feels like that's long enough to me, but I'm betting the Pebble doesn't do whatever the iWatch does.
I'm going to say that's the problem is that this is like a way more sophisticated thing. It's probably, you know, the screen, what kind of screen you're going to have on all sorts of different things. And that to me is like, I was like, so like, what do you know about it? And he was like, well, really not much. I'm not part of the team. He goes, I just know, yeah, anything? Come on. He goes, give me more. And he goes, all I can tell you is that the battery is a place of intense interest. Not intense interest. That's what weren't the word. But it was that same sentiment. The battery is a huge place of focus. It's going to last a long time. And if it doesn't, they're not going to try to sell them. It's funny, dude. I like it more and more. I like talk to people. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so happening. I'm so stoked.
So my question is A, when and B, how much?
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen is they're going to ship me my Pebble and like 3 months later, they're going to come out with an iWatch for $300. I'm going to go, oh.
It could be 2 weeks, man. I'll bet there's a party. Okay. I'm starting to get excited because I have come back around.
Lower.
They're going to announce.
Lower.
I know.
Lower.
Yeah. But they're definitely going to launch a piece of hardware in 2 weeks.
Okay. All right. Probably, I bet you know.
Probably a computer.
Okay. All right. A computer, I guess.
Not a new piece of mobile tech, but a new MacBook or something. Because there's all of a sudden they're getting all sorts of reports of constrained supply for different Macs. And I agree. I do have to take a deep breath and not get excited for a mobile piece of tech. But oh my goodness, it'd be really cool if it came along. Because iOS 7 is going to be such a big deal, and they're going to try to focus on that so much. But I don't know. I really want an iWatch. I lost my Fitbit Friday night as well.
Oh, bummer.
It's a real bummer because I really, really like it, and I've become a huge fan of the device. I might be able to get a super cheap one because I have a friend that works at Best Buy, and he's going to give me a crazy deal. But it is a nice enough part of my. I found that I actually walked way more because of it.
Like, you know, I have one very similar to it.
I know,
right here.
I know what you're going to tell me.
It has all the same features.
Like $10. No, it doesn't.
Counts your steps.
It does count your steps, but mine actually, you know, yeah, I know. I've actually thought a lot about that. I might go with the $10 one, and you know, because I'm sure the iPhone, the iWatch will have. I don't know. I got to think about it some more. I got to figure out what kind of a price. If it's a $90 device at Best Buy, if he can get it for me for $45. I think I might go for it, which he might be able to because they have huge markups on those things. Yeah, I guess they have crazy markups on that sort of thing. But at $60, I think I might be better off just waiting. I don't know. I'm bummed, dude, because it was awesome. It was great. But whatever. Frustrated. Anyways. Let's talk about something else.
Yahoo!
Yahoo! Woohoo! And so Yahoo is they're trying to become an internet portal again.
They're not?
Well, they're trying to become a bigger one.
A relevant one, perhaps?
Or what?
A relevant internet portal?
Yeah, that's probably. The actual title of this Wired article is Marissa Mayer is bringing back the internet portal. Here's why.
Let's see. I haven't been to the Yahoo portal in a while. Mail, news, finance, sports, movies, OMG, Shine, auto, shopping, travel, dating, jobs. Trends, weather, quotes, scores, Flickr, news. Looks like a portal.
It does look like a huge portal.
Very purple.
And soon they're going to be...
Horoscopes. Says here, listen carefully. When that friend or colleague pulls you aside and offers some advice. It may be too easy to brush them off, but try to let the word sink in. It's sure to inspire a positive change.
Oh, man. That is a good...
That's for Geminis.
Yeah. What about the Libras? Not Libras. I'm a Leo.
Let's see here. Not your sign. What are you? You're a Leo.
I'm a Leo. Leo the lion.
You're filled with great mental energy and are utterly receptive to new knowledge. So open up to whatever comes your way. It's a really good time to take a new class or to explore a different culture.
Nice. I'm going to be going... Well, I mean, I actually...
Let's see here. Mine. which you're not going to say. Oh, here we go. Romance is a definite possibility today, but it's not all you've got going on. Ain't that true? Make sure that you're keeping your eyes open for new job prospects or social opportunities, too. Maybe I'm going to meet someone at Arby's tonight.
Oh, man. Dude, horoscopes are so ridiculous. I know.
I love the I got to get this song. I've been thinking of this, and maybe you're the one that I need to talk to. Is I used to have a whole bunch of Weird Al songs, and somehow in the shuffle of life, I no longer have them. And his horoscope song was hilarious.
I don't know if I still have it. But that was a great song.
You will have a great day, and you'll be walking down the street, and then you'll get hit by a bus. You're just like, what?
I gotta say, I wish horoscopes were just like oddly specific. Andrew, watch out for George.
And do not talk to girls named Amy for a week.
Yeah, exactly. Did you see that that one there was a who was it? Cartoon Network had an ad and they were like and it was, you know, pick a card, any card, and it was like, do you have any, are you visualizing the card in your head? And then all of a sudden it popped up, is it a seven of diamonds? And then it like goes away, and then it comes back up. And it's like, there's like a thousand of you out there that are totally freaked out right now. That's awesome. Yeah. That's probably true.
That's funny.
But so, anyways, yeah, Yahoo. They bought Tumblr. Mm-hmm. They're kickstarting Flickr. Mm-hmm. And they're doing some big stuff right now, buying companies and recreating a conglomerate that they can bring everything together in. And one of the reasons why this is interesting is because Google, one of the ways that they tore apart the competition, whether it was Ask Jeeves or Dogpile or Yahoo, as search engine competitors, was that they offered a site that all it had was a search bar and a button to search. Mm-hmm. You know, there was so few elements in it, and it created this environment that people wanted to go and use it for searching. And what it was part of a movement on the internet that was really about specialization and creating a bunch of different services that did one thing and did it incredibly well. And, you know, it really tore apart your old, they were like 10 years old at this point. But your old guard of the internet, like your AOLs and your Yahoos, what they had become were these giant conglomerates. They had a bunch of different services all tied together and they did them all right. But they did everything. So you'd go to one place and they would act as your portal. And so the movement has then turned like, you know, hardcore away from that to hyper specialization, a website that does one thing. And all of a sudden Marissa Meyer is like, you know, basically, and she worked for Google. I mean, like she was part of the, you know, that was like her upbringing was we build specialized services and then, you know, you move forward from that and you don't tie them all together. Well, Google obviously has kind of moved back in the direction of becoming a giant portal because they do all sorts of different stuff that you could do. And so this Wired magazine is basically going, Marissa Meyer is taking one of the plays out of the Google playbook, which is to bring in a bunch of different services that people use. And where Google has built services and in some cases, you know, bought services, whether like YouTube or Gmail or
Maps.
Google Drive.
They made Gmail. They bought...
Well, they didn't buy Maps, did they?
Yeah, well, they bought the original Map stuff and then Google Find it and made it better. Same with their Documents and Drive.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. And YouTube. So, you know, I guess my point is, like, you know, they... Whereas... Yahoo 10 seems like they're not Yahooifying things quite as much, where, you know, they're just bringing in a bunch of different services, and And I thought it was really interesting that, you know, the question of why are they doing this? Mm-hmm. What is the strategy behind this? And
that's a great question.
Yeah, because that's what everybody's thinking. And I've read a lot of different opinions on this. And people who say it's just a huge mistake, they're just like flailing around looking for anything that will give them some sort of an edge. You know, they're just throwing stuff against the wall. I've read stuff that's saying that they're just trying to, you know, bring back the portal. But I think Wire finally really nailed it. Yahoo's going to start doing advertising. They have realized that the value on the internet, the biggest value on the internet, is knowing things about users. And the only way to know things about users is to have a bunch of different services that they use. Think about your two biggest online things right now, or your three biggest online services right now: Amazon, Google, and Facebook. And universally, their biggest thing that they have going for them is that they know an unbelievable amount about what you like and what you do.
True.
You know, Amazon and Google are particularly well poised because they are showing you what they think you want to know when you're looking for something. Facebook is in this weird place of you're not actually looking for any products, but they know what kind of products you might want. So there's a bit of a problem with their advertising model in that they're trying to advertise to you when you're not actually looking for products.
Which, did you see that Zuckerberg recently denied that they're working on an ad network again?
Yeah.
Nick's seen that one. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
He's a liar. the idea that they're not like working on it to some degree is just,
or not releasing one anytime soon, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. I think Zuck learned that one from Jobs, in that, you know, just blatantly, no, we're not doing that. That's a stupid idea.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. 3 months later. But so what's interesting here is that's basically, I think, what I, you know, and I completely agree on this, is that this is what Yahoo's doing. The goal here is to, you know, they bought Tumblr as a source of getting information about people. They want to become a data mining company again, and they want to get a number of services that have a huge cross section of users, so that you can get as much information about different people and put that stuff all over the place. And Yahoo's got a number of different services, you know, whether it's, you know, weather, this mm-hmm. or that or whatever. And I feel like they actually are, you know, a lot of people are criticizing them, saying that this is a ridiculous strategy, it'll never work. But I actually don't think it's that bad of a strategy. I think that they have a website where, especially, you know, particular, I think that they have a website that will help them as they, you know, or what am I trying to say here? I think what Google does best is they help you buy stuff. Amazon helps you buy things. Mm-hmm. If Facebook can figure out how to help you buy things and then advertise, they all of a sudden, they would completely turn around their advertising dilemma. And I think I almost never use Yahoo, so I like don't know how good their, you know, their different storefront stuff is. Yeah, it's almost worth trying to figure that out just for the sake of it. But I think that, oh, it's actually a pretty clever little idea that they're working on here. You know, building up a network of knowledge base. And all of a sudden, it's funny, when you compare and contrast that to previous CEOs of Yahoo, and, you know, how terrible and, you know, mm-hmm. And floundering their strategies were, you're like, I can see why everybody's super stoked about Yahoo and why their stock is just skyrocketing. Because even if this doesn't work, at least it's a vision that like works for some people, you know? And then in that context, you know, a gigantic purchase of a major blooming social network in Tumblr that could be dead in less than a year, because it's you know, it's the hot new club right now and maybe the stupid club in 6 months, you know, all of a sudden, it makes sense, though, in that context of, yeah, but it's still going to give us a ton of information about users. It's, you know, as long as it's part of this giant thing, it's like, why is Google Plus still great? Because Google Plus still has a ton of information about a lot of different people, and it generates that information and allows them to put that somewhere. And I think as we look at Yahoo and what they do, I think we definitely need to keep in mind that that's the goal, that's the game plan, to build up a knowledge base of their users, of everybody on the internet, and they want to compete with Facebook and Google and Amazon on knowing everything about you so that they can sell that information to the highest bidder. It's interesting, though. I feel like it actually explains it for the first time.
Yeah, I could see that. Do you think they'll be able to pull it off?
Man, they've pulled off surviving for an awful long time.
Yeah,
I think that's true. What?
So I'm in this house, like, all alone. Yeah. And I caught out of the corner of my eye what looked like to be something standing there.
Oh, jeez.
Completely freaked me out. It's the vacuum cleaner. But for, like, that half second, I was like, oh, my word.
That's awesome.
Mini freak out there. Sweet.
Yeah, now your blood's going. You got my heart rate up.
I'm awake. What was I going to say? You know, I've been encouraged by a couple of their apps. Their iPhone weather app is really cool.
That's what everybody's saying.
It's not quite like WeatherSpark, which is a web, which is a desktop only app, and which is like that's my go to if I have a choice because I'm a data guy myself. But yeah, no, it looks really cool. I've liked some of the other updates they're doing. I think Tumblr is a pretty cool service, as you can tell. I use it a little bit. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm rooting for them. Their product's got to be better than anybody else's. I'd be shocked if I ever switched to search with them or switch over to their mail system. That sounds pretty incredible to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I sit there going, okay, if I'm rooting for them and I want them to be successful, how do I envision myself using them in the future? Because I feel pretty good about my mail and calendar and contacts with Google. I don't see that changing anytime soon, and I think they feel that way too. With a lot of the productivity apps, I do like Google Finance more than Yahoo Finance. But I don't know.
I think, weirdly enough, right now, I am not invested in any photo ecosystem online storage, and that's been the big one. And I actually think the fact that they give you like an unbelievable amount of storage for your photos is something that every time I think about putting stuff online, if I'm putting it on Facebook, it's just so that I can show off that I was doing cool things.
Yeah.
But for actual storage and putting it, all last week I've been thinking I should go on to Flickr. I should sign up for Flickr.
I'm on there. You can friend me. And they got to figure out, like, they got to take it to that next step, I think, where they, in addition to being able to show it online, they should include some form of photo management and maybe editing. But more importantly, I want to be able to have it be that central hub where I can download at will, I can upload at will to multiple devices where they got APIs and everything syncs beautifully, and I can share if I wanted to. You know what I mean? I just want I want it to be similar. It doesn't have to be exactly, but similar to a desktop style application that happens to live in the cloud. And what would be fantastic and amazing, Apple will never do this, but so, you know, can't worry about it. But if it could sync to, say, like iPhoto in the same way that mail syncs to an IMAP service.
Right.
That'd be the holy grail.
And I think that right now there's an opportunity for them there. And I think I guess what my point is, you're asking what service would I use. To me, off the top of my head, I'd use Flickr and Tumblr. I don't know what I would use Tumblr for, because I'm not much of a micro blogger.
Not a content creator.
Well, yeah, just yeah, or it's okay. But Flickr is, I mean, that's compelling, and I can understand why people are using Tumblr right now. And I can see how those sorts of services, you know, do something unique and different and could be a competition. Yeah, I'm not going to change my Gmail, but I'm not going to move away from Gmail, I guess. But, you know, the reality of it is if they had a better, you know, if they had a better portal somehow or a better on, you know, internet mail product, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't just import all my mail over there as opposed to into Gmail, because that's what I do with Gmail. You know, I've got like 9 different email addresses and they all, you know, and all I use Gmail for is as a central hub for all my emails. And, you know, if I could do the same thing with Yahoo and it was a better one, so, you know, in some way, I could see that. But I don't know. It's an interesting question, but I think they're at least moving in the right direction. They're you know, they're doing something which is better than what they were doing. So
yeah.
But I don't know. So
here we are. In your pause, I'm going to take an opportunity here.
Go for it.
We've reached the part of the show, folks, where it's a little less scripted, which I know is hard to believe. But another thing that happened at All Things D was Mary Meeker gave her presentation on the future of mobile wearables and Facebook, the internet in general. We've talked about her a couple times. She was the one who brought up that whole like asset light versus asset heavy concept.
Right.
Yeah, which I loved and have used a couple times, and people are like, "What? You're weird." I'm like, "No, think about it. It works." Anyways, she gave an update and I wanted to share a couple of the things. There was like 100 slides total and we're not going to go through all of them. But a couple of the things that she talked about, or you know, her insights, whatever you want to call them, is that there are 2.4 billion internet users.
And ooh, that's a lot of us.
Increased 8%, which is cool, mostly in Iran and Indonesia, which is cool. And mobile is growing at 30% growth rate, not just at the 8. So it's on a tear, which is pretty sweet. She also said that the last few decades were about the rise of the personal computer and the smartphone. She says the next few decades will be about wearable computing, like Google Glass and fitness tracking bracelets, as well as other stuff like drones and smart cars. And she's talking about how that's going to drive the personal data revolution.
What does she mean by the personal data revolution?
Ah, great question, which was her next big topic. And she said that people are getting used to uploading and sharing little bits about their detail. She said that's going to accelerate significantly. And she goes, photos are still the most popular, but they'll also start sharing like personal data, whether it's your steps or your weight or stuff like that. And they'll also be able to share like videos and sound files and, you know, just... you will be able to upload a whole bunch of more and more personal types of data, not just photos or status updates. I'm here, or location, you know, at this concert. It'll be a whole bunch of other, you know, types of things, which will be enabled by these, I guess you would say, as you add more sensors to your life, we will tend to share the output of those sensors.
That's interesting, because I find that I'm not the type of person who shares what I'm having for lunch, because I'm not, because I don't want to share what I'm having for lunch, but because I feel judged for it, because everybody gets made fun of for tweeting about their lunch.
I post photos of my dog all the time. I don't care.
Yeah. And I guess, but it's interesting with the Fitbit. Like, one of the things I thought was interesting, I kept thinking about doing was like tweeting how many steps I've taken, or, you know, like sharing it on Facebook or stuff. Cause they have like that functionality built into the app, which was cool. But at the same time, I was like, this is boring. Does anybody really want to know this?
Well, and I wish there was something where it's like only tweet if I get above like 20,000 or I set a 6 month high.
That's well, that does sort of give that kind of cool ability. Yeah, I mean, like, it's not just a tweet every day when I how many steps I walked. It's like I hit a milestone, tweet about it.
I had a friend who was like, every day it would update, it would tweet out and do a Facebook status update because they were linked. His Xbox Live, how many Xbox achievement points he earned the previous day.
Oh, geez.
And he played a lot of video games, and so it was like every day he'd earn somewhere between like 20 and 50.
Holy cow. Like,
come on, dude. That's boring.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. Give me something interesting. But what I do think is interesting is part of the Fitbit app is everybody who uses a Fitbit, or if you have like friends, it'll basically keeps a running total for the week of how many steps you've taken. So you can compete with everybody else, which
that's
I
cool.
have fallen far behind. Well, I'd say I haven't fallen far behind. I'm now the number two because I haven't been able to take any. I haven't walked for the last 2 days, according to Fitbit. Was the leader. But all of a sudden I did, in that context, yeah, man, I'm not going to tweet about how many steps I take because that's lame. But I will compete against anybody else who's using the same device. come on, man, let's make a competition about it, especially because I was winning. I could see that. I could totally see that. And Vine, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, last week, whatever. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get into Vine more, and so I've posted some videos, and I have friends that are starting to make more videos all of a sudden. And I totally buy that. And I think what's interesting is that I think there's a tendency to think that when she says you're going to share it more, it means you're going to post the football to Facebook, but I don't think that's true. And at least that's not my tendency necessarily. My tendency is more to have your smaller networks of people that actually care about this, specifically
that's fair.
People that have trackers.
As
but
it should
that
be.
Doesn't mean that I'm but that doesn't mean I'm not going to do that. It does me actually means I'm going to do it more, and I'm going to do it. You know, I will share in those communities as long as you give me that opportunity to do it. I think products that do that and they focus less on the broader social network and more on the more local, important, the social network, keep it in the network where the information is important. I think those will be the really early succeeders.
Where people are known to be interested in it.
Exactly.
Because they themselves do it.
Exactly.
Makes sense. Also, here's a big surprise. Facebook still dominates social media activity.
Whoa.
And they are doing good with their transition to mobile, but there are other companies such as Twitter, YouTube, Tumblr, and Pinterest that are all doing well too. And then she talks about the rise of the visual web, which is like, on average, more than 500 million photos are shared each day. That's a lot. Snapchat is actually the biggest. Which is kind
of a photo share.
Yeah, Facebook, then Instagram. She said that Snapchat is really interesting because none of that content flows through the private messaging because none of it's findable, essentially. And she said that there's this secular move for a generation to upload everything, but it doesn't have to be findable, which is kind of weird.
It is weird, but
which gets back to your mini network thing.
Right, I read somewhere that statistic that Snapchat shares more photos than anybody else and by a tremendous amount, and I find that to be completely true in my life. I send way more photos and get way more photos through Snapchat than I only have like 6 people that I use Snapchat with. I'm like, which is weird to think about, and although I have a bigger network of people that I can use it from, I find that there's only like 6 that I actually share it with, but I'm more willing to share the photo because I know that those 6 people are going to care. And I know that they won't care. And it'll just go away after 10 seconds, I because of that, yeah, and I would argue that for Snapchat, it's way less about the fact that it's there and then it's gone, that it deletes it, because me and all the people that I use it with, we don't share anything that would get us in any trouble on any level with anybody. They're totally banal photos, but it's the fact that it's a small network of people, and it's just really quick and easy to share your photos and your videos. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. And
makes you think that Path was really kind of ahead of its time in terms of being a private social network.
Yeah.
Or it was they were trying to be a private general social network. Yeah. And what they really should have done was focused on one of them and just done that.
Yeah. I think so. I agree. I agree. But that's fascinating.
It's almost like you provide some sort of functionality and then you just share within that community. Like your Fitbit, even Snapchat, I don't know, it provides the ability for you to take a picture, I guess. But I was just thinking, I could see where, what's that one where you listen to music and you subscribe to it?
Pandora?
No.
Spotify.
Where you could, share what I'm listening to with my friends. But the main service is they allow you to listen to music. Then you just share. It's not just about sharing.
You know what? That's interesting because I feel like I like Spotify. I actually feel like I would be way more likely to use the social aspects of it if it weren't just post to Facebook everything I listen to. Because, and I've said this before, I am oftentimes embarrassed by the music I listen to, and I don't want everybody knowing it. So, like, you know, but if there was a small group of people that I could, that it made it really convenient to share that, even if it was through my Facebook login, but none of it ever made it to Facebook, it all stayed within Spotify, I'd be way more likely to use it. If they pushed that as a feature, as opposed to just, so what's goofy is you can share playlists with Facebook friends, from Spotify to Spotify, but that's not the focus. What I'd like is a kind of in Spotify, keep it in Spotify, keep it in the network of people, you know, go to my Facebook list, but only the people I pick off my Facebook list who I want to, like, you know, talk to and keep them and allow us to kind of discuss and listen to music together. I'd be way more likely to use that aspect of a social music site than I would be, you know, using the Facebook part of it, mostly because I don't want to be judged.
Yeah, interesting. I think we're hitting on a couple things. So interesting indeed. And then the final one is that Americans actually share less than the rest of the world. How about that?
That's interesting. That's actually really interesting. That's really interesting because, like, you know, the narrative has always been that, you know, we're all self-obsessed, you know, we're all prima donna wannabe stars, and so we're always talking about ourselves no matter how boring our lives are. But I think part of the problem is that compared to other parts of the world, our lives can be pretty boring. Like, if you were in Turkey right now, yeah, I bet you share a lot more than most Americans.
Well, and this was the way that the wording of it is weird. It was, they said, like, for the rest of the world, like 24% of the people said they share most or everything. But that was only 15% for Americans. So it's like less Americans share everything. But I have a funny feeling that we have a lot, we still share a lot. Or how do I want to say it? Like, let's say, we'll use photos as an example. I go, no, I don't share every single photo. I only share every third photo. But I happen to take, you know, 3 to 6 photos a day. So I'm actually sharing 1 to 2 photos a day. Whereas in another country, they might be like, oh, yeah, I share every single photo, but I only take 2 or 3 photos a day.
Right.
You know, or something, that, you know, 1 or 2 photos a day, that's it. And so it's like, oh, it actually turns out to be the same amount of sharing. I just, in my situation, I don't call it everything, yeah. And then theirs it is, but so it's weird. That's the stats in me coming out, trying to deconstruct the nature of the how could this work either way? Which I often suck the fun out of stats when I do that. Cause you're like,
you know what?
It's not as cool as it could have been.
Well, it doesn't. It's not as shocking, but I think it's more interesting when you deconstruct stats and you actually understand what it is that's being asked and how it's being asked. Because it, you know, it's a Freakonomics type thing. That's always the...
Yeah, well, I had... The one where I got myself into a lot of trouble was... It was my wife works in a dual immersion school, and they were talking about the success of dual immersion students over non-dual immersion students. Yeah. And I finally... I started asking a whole bunch of questions about it and like what the survey was and how they. I was like, "Well, how do you know that?" You know, because like it's interesting. Like, oh well, they just ran a survey and they found that they, you know, they looked at test scores and they dual immersion students did better than non dual immersion. I was like, it sounds to me like the test really discovered that having parents who are involved in their students' lives tend to do better, even when you put them in a hard situation of learning two languages while going to school at the same time. And she was like, well, you know, I was like, yeah, which I sucked all the fun out of that one because their whole value proposition was your student will be smarter because they were in dual immersion because we have the data to show that your students perform better when they get older. It's like,
well, that's the classic students who go to, or kids who go to preschool tend to do better in elementary, middle, high school, college, and life in general. And you're like, wow, preschool really does make a lifelong difference. You're like, no. Parents who care send their kids to preschool.
Make a lifelong difference.
Parents who care, yeah. It's just that it's a symptom of the same thing, which, you know, that's interesting.
Yeah, which kind of, you know, sucked up because they were like, this is an amazing program. We're making students better. I'm like, no, you're really just filtering out the good parents from the bad. Which, hey, that's cool.
It's not a bad thing. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my goal in life is to,
But I'm kind of like, what if you could filter that out and then they didn't do dual immersion? How much better would they be? Or what if we decided to say, and instead of teaching them Spanish, we taught them computer science? You know, which again, I mean,
there are.
I did not
options.
Make friends when I started saying that because they were all invested in dual immersion.
I can't imagine why attacking people's jobs and careers and how they perform it would cause them to not like you. That's
say that they were actually making the students' lives harder. They were succeeding despite them instead of because of them. Yeah, that went over really, really well.
Yeah,
that was. But I was right, so that's whatever.
You see, this makes me feel better about my earlier comments about people who work at Verizon and AT&T. See, at least you're attacking teachers.
That's right. Yeah. I'm not attacking teachers. I'm attacking the model. But that's different.
I'm sure they felt like that. That's how it was. I'm sure they felt like you were attacking the statistics model and not them as as teachers.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
But
I was just saying what they were saying was false. No, and then the best part here, we'll get real personal, is my wife was like, man, when we have kids, we should do the dual immersion. I was like, awesome. I would love for them to learn Mandarin because that's the language of the future.
Yeah, that's a...
Yeah, that went over really well, too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to learn Portuguese, and I won't, because I think Portuguese is going to be as big as Mandarin, but...
For the week that you're there, or...?
Well, I do want to learn it for the week that I'm there, but I also want to learn it because I do think that... I know for a fact that manufacturing is picking up in a big way down there, you know? Building robots that build computers, and I like to build those sorts of things.
They have a pretty good startup culture, too. I could see
it's
that.
True. And you know, it's Brazil. I mean, it's, you know, it's nice there, right here.
I would say this last part of the show, you own it.
Okay.
Go at the speed that you want to go at. I'll try not to slow you down too much. But
all right. So, number one.
A bunch of little things you want to talk about, and we've got 20-ish minutes.
Okay. All right. So, first off, we're all familiar with the idea of a system on a chip. It's an entire computer chip built into a single piece of silicon. So it's got RAM and usually some sort of a solid state memory area, whether it's, you know, like flash memory or whatever. It's got the CPU. It's got the whole nine yards.
It's got the
system on the chip. You can and they're pretty cool. And usually will have like power regulators and stuff. And most phones have systems on chips now, and they're getting all over the place. We're big fans of them here. This one company,
Freescale.
I can't remember. Thank you, Freescale. Have designed a chip that kind of takes the cake on smallness. This thing is like absolutely tiny. Take a look at the L on your keyboard. If you're not sitting next to your computer, just imagine it. The L, but the size of the L. This little thing isn't as tall or wide as the L on your keyboard. It's itty bitty. It's absolutely tiny. It's the KL02 is what it's called. It's a, it's 2 millimeters square, which is ridiculous. It's absolutely
keep going.
Small.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Now, are you worried about your vacuum cleaner attacking you at this point? I feel like he actually read this article. Man, I hate talking to an empty chair. So this microchip is 2 millimeters by 2 millimeters square. It contains almost all the components of a tiny functioning, computer, and it is a promising start. A little bit more about this little thing. It's really about... Thank you for coming back. I am so bad at talking to the teacher.
There was some shouting going on, and as a concerned citizen, I wanted to figure out what it was. And it was just a really intense game of horseshoes, apparently.
That's awesome.
But they were getting into it.
That's awesome. So this this little chip, basically what they did was they're just kind of – it's a kind of a proof of concept. They don't actually talk about what its equivalent processing power is, which isn't shocking because I'm sure
probably
it's got basically
much.
None. But what's weird is it may be as powerful as like a computer from like 15 years ago because or maybe even more. Maybe if you get go back 2025. But the idea is that, you know, if you were to build a computer into everything, what would it take to build an Internet of Things? You know, what would it take to put a computer into your shoes, your shirt, your pants, your glasses, your hair, your pills, your water glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And basically what their argument is it require two things. Number one, it would require incredibly small computers. Mm-hmm. Number two, it would require wireless connectivity. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. And so they're designing these programmable computer chips, which is just like awesome. And these things are tiny. And the goal for their next integration is to build wireless technology into it. There's two communication protocols they're looking to make it work with. One is Bluetooth, and the other is the Zigbee or the XBee or whatever you want to call it. For those of you who are familiar with Android, it's the most popular radio out there for talking to having two and Arduinos talk to each other.
Huh.
And basically they're trying to make these little things be radio connected, talk to your Bluetooth. So the idea being that you could, you know, have, you know, all of these things all over the place and they talk to your phone or they talk to whatever routers are around. What's really I find really interesting. I get into this kind of stuff because, you know, Moore's law was always thought of as like your big is your big limiting factor on. Obviously, Moore's law states that every 18 months the number of transistors on a piece of silicon would double, and that's stated true. And therefore, processing power has approximately doubled. Transistor sizes have, and so over the years, you've been able to pack a ton of transistors onto these tiny, small, little chip packages. And what they were saying here is what's really fascinating is that this is actually getting a wireless antenna and getting all of the different components into it is less about about Moore's law and more about packaging technology. And what they're saying is basically what's happened is Moore's law or just progress in building transistors on a silicon chip has gotten so good that you can fit all the transistors you need in order to do those sorts of processes, build the whole entire system on a chip with a wireless communication protocol into a tiny little package. The problem is that all of the transistors are so close together that they start to interfere with each other. And where it really becomes a problem is that the radio technology, because it's working with fluctuating magnetic fields in order to send radio waves, which is what a radio wave is, that kind of system creates electrical noise that is really corrosive to things like solid state memory drives, and particularly flash memory. And what they're finding is that they basically have to keep all of those things separated a certain distance, or design the packages in such a way that they keep them on separate sides of the chip. And so there's this real movement now into building better packaging technology, and that's actually where Freescale's core competency is building better packaging tech. And they've worked with the Defense Department building super small chips for weapon systems, where everything needs to be all in one place and it needs to be really small and it needs to work every time. And so they're using those same ideas and principles to build these new computer chips that can do everything. And they're talking to, it's, for me, it's kind of fun because this is like right in my industry of, how do you build computer chips? And in the computer chip world is all, it's basically 2D. There's a bit of 3D to it, but if you think about like a computer board, it's one board and it's got a bunch of different components all over it. And although there's thickness to everything, it's all side by side. Either it goes up in the X or goes into the Y. Nothing comes out towards you. No chips are like two or three layers deep. They're all one layer deep. And that's what I would mean by 2D, is that they're all one layer deep. All of your chips exist in the same plane. Well, these guys are talking about how actually we might only be able to do this if we build things into the third plane as well. And so they've worked on packaging to be able to do that. And it's really kind of fascinating.
Wow.
And yeah, it's super exciting, especially if you're into an Internet of Things like we are. The best part about a little chip like that is that they're going to be cheap compared to full-on computers, because they're tiny little pieces of silicon. So one wafer can make tons and tons and tons of them. And when you can make a huge number of them, you can sell them for very little. So that is pretty exciting.
I like it. Let's do it.
The other one that I want to kind of think about is Apple launched a new product last week.
Woohoo!
Were you even vaguely aware of that?
It's a stupid product.
Were you aware of it?
Yes.
They didn't even announce it. So what is it? It's a new iPod Touch. And it's a 16 gig iPod Touch. It's basically the iPod Touch without the camera.
Yeah. And it only comes when they're silverback, no colors. And it's cheaper.
Yeah, it's dramatically cheaper. It's $70 cheaper. It's almost a third off.
It's dumb. I don't think they'll sell any.
Well, so why do you think they did it?
Dude,
I think it was just a price point thing.
I don't know. It's a dumb product. I don't know why you would do it.
Okay.
If it were me, I would have done the exact opposite. Make an iPod Touch with only the camera app.
I agree.
And the ability to share. You know, give me cameras, video, share. Done.
And I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think
that's a software deal.
And I think that they should have... I agree to, in principle, that they went the wrong direction. I think they would have been way better off putting a 20-megapixel camera in it, actually turning it into a camera an iPod built in.
Yeah, well, and they sat there and said, it's a music player. Is essentially what it is. It's not a camera, but
yeah. But they left the front facing camera for FaceTime on it. They left everything else in it except they left the camera app. It just they got rid of the little dongle, the little like clip thing that allows you to.
I don't know.
It
doesn't make any sense to me. But sure, they were hitting a price point.
Yeah. Stupid.
Yeah, okay. It is. I don't get it. The shuffle, the watch shuffle that had the 4x4 or the 2x2 on it, that made a whole lot more sense to me.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think the only reason I think one of the reasons why they let that depreciate out of the market was because it was going to affect directly a product that was already in the, or was going to compete directly with a product that was already in the pipeline, which was you know, their smart watch. And I think it's become clear to me, at least, that that was the idea behind it. It was succeeding as a smartwatch, and they thought that that product was going to come out sooner than it has. And so they were getting rid of it in preparation for that.
Had to have been a price point. They knew that there are people who wanted one that was cheaper, and that was the only way that they could get it cheaper. Was they were like, we gotta get rid of the camera.
Yeah, I guess like, so. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know any other reason why. Because the product itself doesn't make any sense. I could be wrong. Maybe tons of people will buy it and, you know, it'll be awesome or whatever. But
yeah, I agree. But people tend to want more, not less. I don't know.
I think there's a reason why they just released it on the web and didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm coming back around. You're right. They're not proud of it, and so they just knew they thought they had to do it, but they're not proud of it. So
which makes you go, why? Just eliminate it.
Right.
Just.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Sony doesn't make any money on electronics. Not only do they not make any money, they actually lose money. They make negative money. Sony's most profitable sector right now, insurance. Not insurance on electronics, but like car and life insurance.
Regular insurance. I didn't even know they did insurance.
Yeah, nobody does. I guess they're kind of a big deal outside of America. But they do like regular old insurance, and they're making money hand over fist in that department. They also make a lot of money in their media department, not quite as much, but you know, Sony Entertainment,
music and movies.
Yeah, music and movies. So like your Spider-Mans and are where they make a huge amount. So the electronics division has lost a cumulative $8.5 billion. That's just a lot of money.
Wonder how much of that was PS3 being sold at a loss.
Yeah, exactly. You know, which it makes sense, I think, to keep that as part of your entire network. But basically, there's a big argument right now saying maybe you guys should get rid of that department and just sell insurance. Which is like Japan's like, this is like their pride and joy.
You can't say
Japan
that
as a tech company. I know, so Sony is currently working on trying to not blow all of their money on their electronics. This is crazy. So in contrast, Sony's film and music division, which produced hits like Spider-Man movies and Zero Dark Thirty, and recorded musicians like cellist Yo-Yo Ma and electronic music duo Daft Punk, have contributed $7 billion to the company's bottom line over the last decade. Sony's division has lost cumulative, or electronics division has lost cumulative $8.5 billion. So basically, all the movies and music they've made over the last 10 years has done nothing.
It's funded the electronics
division. Which and you make the comment that, you know, the PS3 being sold at a loss, but they didn't sell enough PS3s to lose that much money. I mean, that's
true.
The entire division. Cameras, TVs, computers.
So I got to get a Sony TV, huh? Because those things are on sale, apparently.
Yeah, basically, that's what they're going for. Speaking of Peter Parker, he's out of a job. Well, not a crime-fighting job, but as a staff photographer. The Chicago Sun has decided that they don't need pro photographers anymore, so they fired them all and gave all of their reporters iPhones and said, go take pictures with this. Which is an interesting strategy.
Wait. So they're there or they're not? I don't understand.
No, all the photo staff got fired.
And then they gave the regular or the remaining
reporters.
Staff reporters.
Yeah, like the guys that actually like do the written article, they're going to be taking their own photos now.
Oh, I have a friend who's in the newspaper biz here in town, and that's what he does. He does the sports section, and he had a flip cam, and then got rid of that, and he still has a nice, is it a Canon or Nikon, you know, he's got a nice SLR. But he's like, dude, it's so many times he'll go to a game Dude, here, quick interview. Camera up, take it, or he'll snap a couple of pictures and then email him to the main office. Go, done.
Nice.
Like, so, and he's like, and the quality is fine, you know, for right. a local and newspaper.
I read an interesting editorial on this move because it's kind of, you know, people are obviously like, oh my gosh, you're firing a bunch of people. But the editorial was referencing back to like, you know, over the years, especially with like TV media, there was a time when you would have the person who stood in front of the camera, this person who stood behind the camera, and then there was another person who did all the editing. And for years and years and years, that was the case for your news reporters on TV. And then at some point, they realized that, like, video editing was simple enough that a reporter or a camera guy could figure out how to do it. And so they basically fired all the editors and just told the camera guys, do our editing for us. And they're like, it was awful at first. It was just terrible because they didn't know what they were doing. They weren't pros. But what happened was, like, after 5 years or so, the upcoming camera guys realized that that's what they needed to be good at. Or, more importantly, the editors realized that if they wanted to get into editing, they needed to learn how to take video. And so, after, like, 5 years, all of a sudden, a whole new crop of pros
talent.
Came in.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the quality really increased. The cost dramatically decreased. And basically people just got better at it. And so it's like the view is, yeah, this is just where it's going to go. They're firing Peter Parker because they don't need him anymore. Learn how to do two jobs. So pretty interesting there, I thought.
Peter will always have a job. He's the only one who gets a good shot of Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's true. But they're going to make him write about it too, not just... I don't know if that's how it's going to work with your tabloids. So the last one I want to talk about, and this is just a brief mention, this will come up again, but Intel has officially launched, Intel is launching the new Haswell processor, which is going to be the successor to the Ivy Bridge and your I series.
Those ones had a really long run, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And they're still good chips. They're still really good chips. The Haswell processor, there's two articles that, and we should link the better article, because The Verge did an article, and it's interesting enough. The lower one, the one that says the better article. Yeah.
Oh.
The Verge did an all right article about it, but Anantech did a great one, but it's like super long. And they get into like what it is, why it's different, and why it's better. And its battery life or its power management stuff is great. They're clearly taking a big lesson from Apple, or more specifically, Apple has finally got it through their thick skulls that if you don't fix your power management, we're not going to stick with you.
Every single mobile phone manufacturer has said that.
Right. Well, but these are going to be specifically for your computer.
Oh, okay. Got it.
You know, and this thing is, this has got really, really, it's got a lot better battery life, and it's also got a huge amount of graphics performance as well. They're talking about how they're really going to push NVIDIA to have to be dramatically better because now it's got some real solid graphics performance. But what I thought was most interesting about it was why those two things got included. Again, and what they were talking about was there was this idea that back in the day, you know, like 20 years ago, when you were building a motherboard and a processor, you'd have to have they were building these standard plugs that you could plug in so that every, you know, no matter what motherboard or processor you're going to use, they'd all be swappable.
Those were the fun
what
days.
Ended up happening, right? And what ended up happening to Intel was they found out that the die size or the max, you know, the full size the chip that they were going to build was no longer determined by Moore's law and how many transistors they needed. What it was decided by was how big the package was, because it was going to fit into one of these standard pin patterns. And at some point, the number of transistors and everything that they needed started to get smaller and small enough that they didn't need all of the space on it. So they started trying to get creative with what they were going to do with the rest of the space on the chip. And other companies took other strategies, like they'd add a bunch of cache or whatever. But this is actually where Intel started to get into the integrated graphics department, and they'd start putting integrated graphics components into it. And they hired some really brilliant guys to do that, and they did a tremendous amount of performance with almost nothing to work with. Because what they really wanted was a piece of the silicon. They really wanted to be able to do their own transistor work, and Intel's forever was like, no, if we're going to have extra transistors, it's going to be used for the CPU, because that's where it's most important. And I guess this was like not true of Ivory Bridge, but it's really because of the speculation is it's mostly market forces from Apple and their pressure to Intel to build better integrated graphics. They've finally given the graphics department control of a number of the transistors, and they've given the power management guys more access to the silicon as well. So all of a sudden, those two components are given the same class of citizenship as the actual CPU cores, in that they're allowed to do design work in that area. And so both of those things are going to have stellar performance improvements. And you're really going to, hopefully you'll see some just really, really killer ultrabooks coming out across the market, because all of a sudden you don't need a graphics card, or you don't need nearly as good a graphics card, and the power management's just going to be ridiculously better on,
that'll be nice,
on all this stuff. So Apple will continue their advantage in that, because they got better better power management already, and better battery technology. But overall in the market, you'll definitely see an increase in performance. So, pretty cool. I'm looking forward to the next computer that I can put one of these bad boys in. So,
yeah, awesome.
Yeah,
good job, Intel.
Cool, cool, cool.
I like it, man.
That's it.
Hey,
I'm done.
Good show. That was a lot, but yeah, worth it, I think. Awesome. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My brother is Matthew Dean Furlow. And we will talk next time.